circumference. Close to midnight, the bus rushed down a lightless highway, and May Vaughn strained to see past her reflection into the darkness outside. But she couldn't. Pale blue eyes and everything about her was as sharp as the blade she was holding. The flame she held to the blade, though, was soft and round. She sat in the last seat on the bus near the lavatory. There were three other passengers, all succumbing to the rocking as the vehicle groaned along, and they fell into their own comfortable slumbers, dreaming of what they'd left behind or what they were headed to. May Vaughn glanced up to the driver, who sipped his coffee. She put the lighter on the seat and pulled the belt line of her jeans down. She squeezed the strap of her purse tight between her teeth and whimpered when she put the blade to the name tattooed on the soft flesh along the ridge of her hip. Kenzie Waite. The assumption of metal and cement is that it can keep a man contained. So they combine the two to build prisons. Yet all they contain is cold, even when the sun beams through the barred windows. Kenzie could always find relief in the coldness of the walls on his bare back, or his forehead on the bars as he waited. The seasons rolled and tumbled over each other like young playful pets until Kenzie walked out of the prison to the car waiting for him. Kenzie kicked the mud from his shoes and reached for the pack of cigarettes on the dashboard before slumping into the passenger seat. He waved his fingers near the lighter, anticipating the click and bounce. Tank watched them, mesmerized almost by the blackened thumbnail, the lightning bolts on the web of his hand below his thumb, and the wedding band he wore on his index finger. Kenzie took a long drag and trapped a cough in his throat behind clenched teeth. "Go," he said. Tank pulled the shifter down one gear too many, readjusted, and the car moved forward with mud and water lapping and slurping at the tires. Tank rubbed his stomach, then pulled on the flap of his jacket. His body odor drifted over to Kenzie, who ignored it except to roll his window down and lean closer to the air blowing in. "You hungry?" Tank asked. "Nah. You mind if I stop and get a slice?" Kenzie looked at Tank's stomach and the flesh revealed below his shirt. "Wouldn't want you to go hungry." At the store, Kenzie stood outside with a fresh cigarette and leaned against the front fender. Tank went in, and Kenzie watched children riding in circles on their bicycles, skirting the edges of puddles with a dotted spray of brown at the back of their shirts. He finished his cigarette. 20 minutes later, Tank came out with a pizza box and his hand under the lid, pulling out a slice. Tank slipped into the seat and maneuvered the box into the vehicle, stretching his head back to pull the pizza in between his neck and above the steering wheel. He slid the box on the dash. Tank was slipping a crust back into the box and reaching for another slice when Kenzie swung himself into the back seat. "What are you doing?" Tank asked, adjusting the rear view to see Kenzie. "Like old times," he responded, looking away from Tank's open mouth chewing. "Let's ride around a while. I'd like to see what's changed since I've been gone." Tank shifted the car into gear with his left hand. They pulled onto Congress Street and drove toward the West End, past Monument Square, where the schizophrenics wailed and screamed at passing cars. Dreadlocked hippies strummed chords on out-of-tune guitars with the cases open, and a few dimes and crumpled bills in there waited for more to arrive. The panhandlers, who were jaundiced and dirty, moaned their mantra, "Spare change," and expelled the stench of beer into the wind. The car stopped at a red light. Tank began his fourth slice. The corner at the library was fenced off for renovations. They moved on, up the hill past the chain stores and bars where the hipsters wore their black skinny jeans and smoked hand-rolled cigarettes with PBR pounders held between their knees. Continuing, they passed the hotel, its plaza swarming with pigeons and gulls diving for thrown cheese doodles and bread. Bums napped on benches, moving occasionally to wave the flies away. At Longfellow Square, Tank turned left and quickly right, passing the adult toy store and the fag bar. When they reached the promenade, Tank had finished half the pizza. Kenzie made his way to a nearby bench, extended his arms across the backrest, and stared blankly through the budding trees toward the oil tanks and the Route 1 bridge. Tank carried the pizza box from the car and took a seat next to Kenzie. "What are you going to do about May?" "You know where she is?" "I tracked her to Buffalo, then Chicago. She stayed in San Francisco for a year. She's up in Toronto now. Maybe she thinks because I'm not supposed to leave the country, I won't." "I think you should leave the area. When the Somalis find out you've been released, they're going..." "What makes you think they don't already know?" Tank stopped chewing and lowered his slice of pizza down to the box resting on his lap. "You should get out of here then. I have a place down in Florida you could stay." "I'm not going anywhere." "Where'd you hide the money?" "In a place where no one goes." Tank thought for a moment. "I still can't believe she did it, Kenzie. Sending me to prison kept me safer than being on the street." "The Brotherhood?" Kenzie nodded. In the car, Kenzie unfolded a slip of paper he'd pulled from his pocket and read the address to Tank. They drove down Forest Avenue into Westbrook to the address. Tank parked the car across the street and looked at Kenzie. "This is a halfway house." Kenzie nodded and tapped a cigarette from his pack. They waited for hours, watching the work bus drop off parolees. The streetlights came on dimly and grew brighter as the sunlight faded and night arrived. Kenzie burned through his pack of cigarettes, and Tank fought his curiosity to ask why they were there. They watched a group of smokers stand beneath the streetlight. Kenzie took no particular interest in any of them until one man came out of the house to join the group. The other men stopped laughing and talking, flicked their cigarettes, and went back into the house, leaving the man to smoke alone. Kenzie leaned forward and folded his arms over the dashboard. "He's popular," Tank said. "You know that guy?" "Ratted on my cellmate. Fucker got done indecent because of him." "What are you gonna do?" "I might cut his head off." Mayvon's telephone rang while she flattened her hair in the laundry room with an iron. It was long and she had dyed it black. A gray cat rolled to his back and stretched his legs on the sofa when she passed. "Hello? Ms. Waite? Who is this?" "This is Detective Robertson. I'm calling to inform you that your husband was released from prison an hour ago." "If you..." May hung up the phone and ran to the door. She checked the deadbolt, and despite her apartment being on the fifth floor, she went around the house to check the windows. The cat leapt to the table and stroked his paw with his tongue, then rolled it over his right ear. The phone began ringing again. She charged at it and pulled a cord from the wall. Tank set a bottle of Senator's Club whiskey on the table. Kenzie, shirtless and skinnier than Tank remembered, twisted the plastic top from the bottle and took a long, burning pull. He shook his head and took another. "What are you doing?" "Getting drunk," Kenzie answered. "Do you want some Coke or something?" "Snort or soda?" "Soda?" "No. Did you get the sander?" Tank nodded and pulled a palm sander from a paper bag. "What's this for?" Kenzie gulped another pull and looked down at the iron cross tattooed on his ribs, just below his left pec. The ink was faded and green. Below his other pec was a clock with no hands. Kenzie ripped another two gulps from the bottle. "Did you bring the other stuff?" Kenzie asked, stretching the sander cord to an outlet. "Yeah, but you're not going to do what I think you are you?" "No, you are." Tank wiped his palms over the flaps of his shirt. Nah, I can't do that, Kenzie." Kenzie pulled a revolver Tank had left for him from his back pocket. He pulled the hammer back and pointed it at Tank's stomach. "I'll shoot you right in your fucking gut." A look of hurt rolled over Tank's face. "Aw, you gonna cry, fat fuck? Cry for me. Let me see those big whimpering fat boy tears. Come on, Tank." Tank maintained his look while Kenzie took a pull from the bottle and blamed his watering eyes on the harshness of the whiskey. He slid the hammer forward and swatted Tank's cheek with the gun. "Pick up the sander or I'll kill you right now." Kenzie sat and lifted his left hand to the top of his head. Tank picked up the sander, stepped toward Kenzie, and thumbed the switch. The humming of the hand tool made Kenzie's skin tingle until Tank pressed the rounded edge into the center of his tattoo. It was a quick, bike-dumping road rash kind of burn until the first several layers of skin were gone and Kenzie's blood slid over the grid of the sandpaper. The pain settled into the bone, vibrating the ribs and sent a twisting pain through his neck. Tank worked the machine up and down, and the pain became a source of lucid memories for Kenzie. Memories pulled to help him through the pain. The way May's cheeks drained pale when she caught a glimpse of him from the stand at his trial. The last he'd seen of her face. And as he looked up at Tank's face, and the words he'd used had fallen like timber against the back of the only friend he had. When it was done, and Kenzie felt the coolness of his blood sliding along the groove of his hip, the two men sat across from each other at the table. Tank pulled in wheezing breaths over his bottom lip. His chin and red cheeks were freckled with drying blood. Kenzie sat hunched over, with his left shoulder in the wound facing Tank. He lit a cigarette and tossed the lighter onto the table. The bottle of Senator's Club was half empty. Kenzie lifted his head. "I'm sorry, Tank. I didn't mean those things." Tank stood. "Your car is in the garage." He tossed a set of keys on the table and left. May Vaughn lay in bed, running her finger over the scar that had once been a mark of slightly raised, inked skin in the form of Kenzie's name. She'd eliminated every reminder of him. The tattoo, pictures, even little phrases of his she'd adopted into her own vernacular. The cat, even, which was crunching away on food at his dish, she'd taken in because Kenzie was allergic. She tried to remember his face, the face that would come for her. She'd spent years pressing her lips against that face, waking to it, brushing sweat from it. The last time she'd seen it, before she testified against him, she'd slapped it. But she couldn't remember it. She remembered his smell, even after 5 years had passed. Sometimes her dreams would trick her into smelling him in the room, on her sheets, biting gently into her shoulder. Each day had been longer than she wanted to endure, but 5 years had passed, and yesterday, it seemed, she gave herself the scar she was rubbing. Tank found a bar that was mostly empty and sulked in a corner with a plate of nachos and a gin and tonic. Halfway through his drink, he hadn't touched his nachos, and the gin was giving him heartburn. The weight against his leg was gaining. In the bathroom, he unraveled the bottom of the bag of shit clinging to the adhesive around his stoma and emptied it into the toilet, a daily reminder of the 12-gauge round that should have killed him. When Tank returned to the house, Kenzie's car was gone. The floor and table had been cleaned of the sprays and spots of blood. The neck of the whiskey bottle was broken off. The cord of the palm sander was wrapped tightly around the neck of the man sprawled out on the kitchen floor. The yellowed white of his dull eyes bulged from his head. Crude oil darkness of his skin seemed impossible to Tank, and his hopes of ever seeing Kenzie alive again vanished. The Somalis brought up $1.5 million worth of heroin into the Portland Harbor every 2 weeks, which is why every 2 weeks it was practically impossible to get a cab on a Friday night. Somalis took control of the livery industry with the influx of refugees. They stacked themselves in apartments and saved enough to buy a car. Half of them didn't have licenses, but as long as the cab was stickered, there was no reason for the cops to pull them over without bearing the stigma of racial profiling. From the harbor, they transported the product to places like South Portland, Lewiston, Sanford, and Biddeford for the big deals. The rest they peddled out of their cabs. Kenzie tracked it all up from that. The night of a drop-off, Kenzie and Tank called the cab. They waited for the dented Lincoln to pull to the curb. Tank climbed in the back seat. Kenzie went around the car and rapped on the driver's window. "You speak English?" "Yes, good," The cabbie answered. Which way is east? The cabbie looked back at Tank. Kenzie slipped zip ties around the doorframe in the opening of the driver's window. Tank lifted the sod off and rested it on the seat. In case you want to pray, Kenzie said, climbing into the cab. The cabbie looked away from the gun and held his hands up. He glanced at Kenzie in the rear view and turned again toward the barrel of Tank's shotgun.
You, Mr. Kenzie? Mr. Kenzie, why you do this to me?
Assalamu alaikum, motherfucker. We're going to your drop tonight. You don't get out of this cab before your brains do unless you do everything I tell you. Now drive. The cabbie fidgeted and tried to regain his composure. He pulled the cab awkwardly back onto the street. Don't forget to call in, Kenzie whispered. Cabbie pressed his two-way against his lips.
Pick up number 7.
We should bail, Tank told Kenzie. Kenzie refused. The cabbie already knew his name. The consequences would be the same. Kenzie made the cabbie drive to an empty school parking lot and kill the cab light. You're done for the night. Call it in. The cabbie maneuvered more calmly that time. When the time came, Kenzie explained to the driver to make his pickup. They dropped Tank off on the corner of Commercial in India, where May sat waiting and hotboxing her cigarettes. Before the cabbie drove down to the wharf, Kenzie put a .45 hollow point piece of lead, mushroomed out from impact, in the cabbie's hand. That's what a bullet looks like when it penetrates skull. Then Kenzie sunk to the floor and pulled a blanket over him. After the pickup, May and Tank followed the cab to Biddeford, where it pulled into the parking lot of an apartment building. Behind every window flashed the silhouette of a pit bull or Rottweiler. The cabbie pressed the button in the glove box to pop the trunk, and moments later, Kenzie watched it open and close. There were 2 men. One of them rapped on the hood, and their footsteps stopped.
What the fuck is that?
One of the men asked, rubbing his fingers over the flange of a zip tie. The other man pulled on the handle. Kenzie dumped 3 rounds into the door. The men scrambled on the ice, shooting wildly at the cab, clipping the cabbie. The cabbie gassed it toward the exit, and taking the turn, he slipped Kenzie from the back seat out onto the snow. The stairway to the apartment filled with shirtless and t-shirted men. Kenzie emptied his clip, forcing the men to spill down the stairs and over the railing or duck back into the apartment. May's car slid sideways into the parking lot, bumping the rear fender of the cab just enough to push the Lincoln out of control and into a snowbank. Tank swung from the car and blasted both barrels of his shotgun at the stairwell. Kenzie slipped the fresh clip into his pistol and shot the lock on the trunk of the cab. He kicked the trunk open and slung the bag of cash inside over his shoulder. East is behind you, he told the cabbie, who was sprawled over the seat, pawing at the gunshot wound in his leg. It seemed like it had happened only moments before. Tank went outside and took a moment to study the neighbor's windows. He went back into the house and pulled the gas line from the stove. Under the sink, he found a box of steel wool, put it in the microwave, and cranked the dial. Tank hurried from the house, dropping the dead man's wallet in the empty flower bed outside the door. May was making her way through Maine, from Canada to Emden Pond. She traveled down Route 201, a path that Benedict Arnold used to help defeat the French in the war, a forgotten, failed endeavor. Her and Kenzie had spent their honeymoon on the pond at the lake house Kenzie had stayed during summers when he was a kid. They planned their life together there, dreams, hopes, and children. At night, huddled close against the crisp breeze off the water, Kenzie slid her wedding band up and down her finger. No matter what happens, he'd said, we'll always come full circle. The detectives brought Tank into the morgue, smiling and joking with one another. The room was exactly how Tank had imagined it. Tile walls, lots of shiny metal, bright, too bright. He couldn't help but be saddened by that, or by the fact that he had actually foreseen the event take place. The body lay beneath the sheet, with nothing but ruffles where Kenzie's head should have been. That he hadn't imagined. Even knowing the brutality of the crime, the body looked fake, a sick joke laid out before him, twisted and awkward from being in the trunk of Kenzie's car. They pulled the sheet to the waistline, exposing the chest and the wound below his pec. The clock tattoo seemed more faded and smaller. Tank glanced over the body at the shoulders, then elbows. He looked away at the sight of the wrists. "Is it him? Is this Kenzie Waite?" By the water, May listened to the loons howling across the stillness, flat, black, and a perfect reflection of the sky and moon. In front of the house, she pulled a pallet from an old well and reached down to the piece of rebar sticking out of the cement. She worked the knot loose from the metal and pulled the bag from the depth of the well. In the next town over, May stopped at the Solon Hotel and ordered a scotch, neat. The man next to her slid his empty beer bottle to the edge of the bar and focused on the news. A body discovered 5 days ago in the trunk of a vehicle in a Portland parking garage has been identified as 37-year-old Kenzie Waite. 6 years ago, Kenzie Waite was found guilty of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon for shooting a Portland cab driver. Waite's wife testified for the prosecution in his trial, to which Waite received 5 years in Warren State Prison. His wife was not available for comment. The news slid into its feel-good story about pet adoption. May lifted the drink to her lips. She took the scotch in one swallow, paid for her drink, and went to the restroom. Her eyes watered, but she did the best she could to put on her makeup, mascara, and lipstick. She gave up on the eyeliner. A few strands of hair clung to her black dress. She pulled them away and twisted them from her fingers into the sink. Outside the bar, she took a deep breath and clenched her hands together. She hadn't been that nervous since her wedding day. Her car idled in the parking lot, and May squinted tears from her eyes. They rolled to her lips, where she smoothed them away with her tongue. She didn't see his hand until it was against her face. His blackened thumbnail slid along the edge of her jaw, and her breathing slowed. "Did you miss me, Kenzie?" Kenzie moved forward in the back seat. His breath tickled her ear. "I told you we'd come full circle." May smiled and pushed her cheek into his palm.